This week on Vaticano, we honor the memory of Pope Francis, reflecting on the final chapter of his papacy, explore his spiritual relationship with Benedict XVI, and discover the resting places of popes buried outside the Vatican. Vaticano starts now. After more than 5 weeks in the hospital battling double pneumonia, doctors advised Pope Francis to take 2 months of rest. However, the Holy Father chose to be among the faithful until his final days. Two weeks after his release, the Holy Father briefly appeared at the end of the closing Mass for the Jubilee of the Sick and the World of Healthcare. After the final blessing, Pope Francis addressed the gathered pilgrims with a few simple words. Good Sunday to everyone.
Buona domenica a tutti. Grazie tante.
The Holy Father also received the Sacrament of Reconciliation in St. Peter's Basilica, spent time in prayer, and then passed through the Holy Door in union with pilgrims. The following week, Pope Francis made several public appearances. He made a surprise visit to St. Peter's Basilica without his regular papal attire to pray and greet the faithful. And on the eve of Palm Sunday, he visited the Basilica of St. Mary Major in Rome. According to a statement released by the Holy See Press Office, the Pope entered the Basilica to pray before the icon of the Virgin Mary, Salus Populi Romani, that he has visited before and after each of his apostolic journeys. On Palm Sunday, Pope Francis came out from the Basilica for around 10 minutes to wish a happy Palm Sunday and happy Holy Week to all those gathered in St. Peter's Square for the Palm Sunday Mass of the Lord's Passion.
Buona Domenica delle Palme. Buona Settimana Santa.
Following his greeting to pilgrims in the square, the Pope returned inside the Basilica, where he paused for moments of prayer before the tomb of the Apostle Peter, and then that of Pope St. Pius X and the monument dedicated to Pope Benedict XV. While Pope Francis didn't lead any of the main Holy Week and Easter liturgies, he made brief appearances over the Easter weekend. On Holy Thursday, Pope Francis paid a private visit to the Regina Celi prison in Rome, where he spent about a half hour personally greeting about 70 inmates who regularly attend catechesis sessions and other activities organized by the prison chaplaincy. Though he was unable to perform the traditional foot washing, the Holy Father told the prisoners that he still wanted to be close to them. On Saturday evening, before the Easter vigil, the Pope made a quick appearance to greet the faithful. Among the last to see and speak to the Holy Father was U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance. During the brief meeting, the two leaders exchanged gifts and Easter greetings. Pope Francis's last public appearance was on Easter Sunday to deliver his Easter Urbi et Orbi blessing from the Loggia of St. Peter's Basilica. His final public words were simple. Brothers and sisters, happy Easter.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, buona Pasqua.
After his message was read by Archbishop Diego Ravelli, the master of pontifical liturgical celebrations, the Holy Father blessed the cheering and waving crowds.
Benedicat vos, omnipotens Deus, Pater, et Filius, et Spiritus Sancti.
He later greeted the faithful in the square below from the Popemobile, for the first time since his hospitalization. The more than 15 minutes he spent greeting and blessing the 50,000 people gathered in the square turned out to be his final ride. The following morning, at 7:35 a.m. local time, the Holy Father passed away following a stroke, which led to a coma and subsequent heart failure.
Devo annunciare la morte del nostro santo padre Francesco.
Despite his frailty, Pope Francis made his final public appearance, doing what he loved most, being among the people and praying with them. Stay with us as we explore the unique and thoughtful bond shared by Pope Francis and Benedict XVI.
Annuncio vobis gaudium magnum, habemus papam. Qui sibi nomen imposuit Franciscum.
For many, it was a surprise when former Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio stepped out onto the loggia of St. Peter's Basilica on March the 13th, 2013. His clothes had changed, as had his name. The 265th successor of Peter, the leader of the Roman Catholic Church, would thenceforth be known as Pope Francis. This was a moment without precedent in the modern era, and it wasn't just that Francis was the first pope from the Americas. It had been many centuries since a non-reigning pope was alive while another was elected. While his successor appeared before the faithful in St. Peter's Square for the first time, to deafening cheers, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, who had stepped down as pope 2 weeks prior, was hidden away at the papal residence at Castel Gandolfo, quietly watching these events on television. What happened next would have touched the Pope Emeritus deeply. Pope Francis called the faithful worldwide to pray an Our Father and a Hail Mary for Benedict XVI.
I would like to say a prayer for our Pope Emeritus Benedict. Let us pray together for him, that the Lord may bless him and Mary may protect him. Our Father, who art in heaven,
che sei nei cieli, sia santificato il tuo nome.
Thus began a decade-long relationship between the two popes, one reigning, one retired. Ten days after his election, the new pope visited the Pope Emeritus at Castel Gandolfo.
How strange. How strange. I think we were all amazed. It was something that was completely outside of any intellectual possibility to see two living popes.
Who has ever seen anything like that, ever? I mean, there have been retired popes, a few, you know, over the two millennia of the church history, but no image like that. There was still a great deal of uncertainty, but I think by that point, Francis had been elected. He came out to see his predecessor, and that was a very reassuring image of unity.
This was just the first of many private encounters between the two. They were at first deferential to each other, each inviting the other to take the lead. In the end, they just shared the kneeler in the chapel reserved for the Pope. Months later, Benedict would take up his residence at the Mater Ecclesia Monastery within the Vatican Gardens, just several hundred yards away from Francis's own residence at the Santa Marta Guesthouse.
He chose to stay in the Vatican instead of going away. He said in his last audience talk, I believe, it was the last public audience, he said that for me, there will be no more going to conferences and giving speeches. I will live a life of retirement, of quiet, of isolation, so of solitude.
In the beginning, it was very strange to see the two popes, as it were, one emeritus and one reigning together. But by staying there, I think it did show that he was not abandoning the church, that he was staying, as he said, in prayer in support of the church.
Some people raise the question of, oh, what will it be like to have two popes in the Vatican? Will it be a conflict? Will it be a... I personally didn't think so. I thought that the choice of living in the Vatican was precisely to avoid that kind of thing.
I think it was the only choice to make in that situation. Because had he gone back to Germany, as he might have liked to have done, you might have had a situation really of two papacies, because you would have had people going to visit the Pope Emeritus, you would have had problems of security, and you would have had visually an idea that he had abandoned the heart of the church.
Archbishop Georg Ganswein, his private secretary, stayed with him for what Benedict thought would be his last months.
He believed that after his resignation, the good Lord would grant him just one more year. Perhaps no one was more surprised than he was when that one more year turned into many more.
Dass aus diesem Jährchen nicht wenige Jahre geworden sind.
After resigning, Benedict XVI only officially left the Vatican walls once to see his dying brother, Monsignor Georg, back in Germany. At the Vatican, though, he took part in several public celebrations, especially just after stepping down.
Particularly memorable were the canonization of Popes John Paul II and John XXIII in 2014, and the opening of the extraordinary Jubilee of Mercy in 2015. The world also saw him at a handful of other events, almost always as just another participant. Benedict's proximity within the gardens could have been awkward, but Francis often said that his was a welcome presence.
I have said many times that it gives me great pleasure that he lives here in the Vatican, because it is like having a wise grandfather at home. Thank you.
And in Benedict's own words, he was in a good place.
Your goodness, evident from the moment of your election, has continually impressed me and greatly sustains my interior life. The Vatican Gardens, even for all their beauty, are not my true home. My true home is your goodness. There, I feel safe.
Pope Francis, during the period of his papacy when Benedict was still alive, treated Benedict with great respect and affection publicly. And as far as we know, that was very sincere. And Francis said that he consulted with Benedict on certain occasions.
I think it was very cordial. Francis himself said he felt he was a wise grandfather for him and for the rest of the church. And you couldn't have any other idea from Pope Benedict. That's really who he was through and through, certainly the wisdom part.
There is reason to think that perhaps Francis felt a bit intimidated by Benedict's presence, and that once Benedict was gone, he felt he had a freer hand. That may be the case, but that doesn't conflict with the idea that Francis also did have respect and affection for Benedict.
Bavarian journalist and Benedict XVI biographer Peter Zeewald actually asked Benedict in interviews if he ever butted heads with Francis.
He did not comment on this, at least not to me. I always tried, of course, also as a journalist, to get something out of him, and he said, no, he definitely didn't want to give the impression, not even remotely, that he was speaking out as a kind of shadow pope about his successor's conduct in office.
And as he carried out the Petrine ministry in Benedict's footsteps, and in an interesting way, as Benedict himself looked on behind the scenes, Pope Francis repeatedly stressed how significant Benedict XVI's life's work was for the Church, not only his theology, but also his commitment to the victims of abuse. Francis lauded his efforts on multiple occasions, including during a 2018 visit to an Ireland still dealing with the aftermath of abuses.
His frank and decisive intervention continues to serve as a spur to the efforts of church leaders to correct the errors of the past and to enact strict rules to ensure that they are not repeated.
Che non accadano di nuovo.
Benedict was known to host visitors to the monastery, private visits, particularly with people he already knew. After new cardinals were made by Pope Francis in St. Peter's Basilica, one of their first stops was to the Mater Ecclesia Monastery to pay their respects also to Benedict. Benedict and his secretary, Archbishop Gansfein, would also pray a daily rosary out in the gardens, accompanying Francis in prayer year after year.
I think that Pope Benedict had a great strength of intellect, obviously, and it was something that carried him forward even with the frailty of his health.
I suppose that if he had remained Pope, he might not have lived 10 years, because the stress of that, the pressure of that office is such that, you know, he might have been worn out, but he was able to rest and have a very quiet life there in Mater Ecclesiae.
2023 Ratzinger Prize winner Father Pablo Blanco Sarto, a Spaniard, saw great importance in Benedict's supporting role.
When a Pope, in a particularly delicate moment, chooses to withdraw for prayer, it serves as a powerful example of the importance of prayer within the Church. His withdrawal is not only a personal act, but also a gesture of support for the Pope who follows, especially during this ongoing process of reform and purification within the Church. This action exemplifies what he articulated in a theory or in his theology, the theology of holiness.
Benedict XVI died on New Year's Eve in 2022 at 95 years of age, almost a full 10 years after stepping away from the Petrine ministry. His final words were, "Jesus, I love you." Days later, Francis celebrated Benedict's funeral, commending his soul to God.
Benedetto.
Benedict, faithful friend of the bridegroom, may your joy be complete as you hear his voice, now and forever.
Benedict was entombed among the many other popes in the grottos of St. Peter's Basilica. Thus closed a fascinating and unprecedented chapter in the history of the Church, when two popes, Francis and Benedict XVI, lived together as friends in Vatican City.
Probably, perhaps the most historic thing about Francis's pontificate, we'll have to see, historians will have to see in time, but it may be this cohabitation, if you want to call it that, of two popes. That's extraordinary, and we'll see again if that happens again.
It will go down in history certainly as the first and the most remarkable period of the papacy, but one that allows for a new possibility. Why not? It's okay. The Church can adapt to something like that and can survive and perhaps even thrive.
Stay with us to explore the popes who are not buried in the Vatican and the history behind their final resting places. Pope dies, the funeral is solemn. The funeral rite of the popes has been codified over the centuries and has two objectives. The first is to show respect and reverence for the remains of a man who became pope. The second is to show the transience of the human condition. The man who became pope is a man who, from the dust, became the successor of Peter, and who, at the moment of death, performs the greatest act of humility by entrusting himself to the Lord of life, testifying his faith in him, and handing over to others the office received. Since the 4th century, after the funeral rite, the popes have generally been buried in the Vatican, with exceptions, reasons of convenience, particular requests of the pontiff, and even practical reasons. Among Peter's 265 successors, 30 were buried outside of Vatican. Pope Francis, in his spiritual testament, also chose not to be buried in the Vatican. He expressed his wish to be laid to rest in the Basilica of St. Mary Major. The last pope before him not to be buried in St. Peter's was Pope Leo XIII, who requested interment at St. John Lateran.
The tradition of burying popes in St. Peter's does not date back to the beginning of Christianity. We know nothing about the burials of the first two centuries. The first popes, up to the 5th century, are buried in the catacombs or some surface monuments. Leo the Great is the first pope to be buried in St. Peter's. From that period on, we have burials scattered throughout the churches of Rome, and then from the end of the 5th century until the 10th century, burials mainly at St. Peter's. The Bishop of Rome is buried where he dies. Bishops who die in Rome are buried in Rome. Sometimes they are also brought to Rome when death occurs outside. A Roma quando la morte è avvenuta
fuori. Pope Francis chose the Basilica of St. Mary Major for his burial because of his deep personal bond with it. He often prayed before the icon of Salus Populi Romani, especially before and after each apostolic journey. He visited the Basilica on the first day of his pontificate. His final visit occurred on April 12, 2025, just days before his passing, when he prayed before the icon on the eve of Holy Week. His connection to St. Mary Major was also rooted in his Jesuit identity. It was here that St. Ignatius of Loyola, founder of the Jesuits, celebrated his first Mass. Pope Francis isn't the first pope to be buried in St. Mary Major. The basilica contains the tombs of Honorius III, Nicholas IV, St. Pius V, Sixtus V, Paul V, Clement VIII, and Clement IX.
In the first two centuries, burial is necessarily where the cemeteries are. And the cemeteries are the catacombs that we know today. Afterward, starting in the third century, we have burials on the surface. The first criterion is that of practicality. Where there is a cemetery, the body of the Bishop of Rome must be laid to rest. Over time, we realize that the Bishop of Rome is a special person. Therefore, we have burials in which all the bishops of Rome are placed together, a holy place par excellence. Un luogo santo per eccellenza.
What other churches in Rome house the bodies of the popes? About 90 popes are buried in St. Peter's Basilica, 21 in the Vatican Grottoes. St. John Lateran is the cathedral of the Pope in Rome, so it's no surprise that many popes have wanted to be buried there. 22, in fact. There are 7 in St. Mary Major, 5 in the Basilica of St. Mary of Minerva, 5 at the Basilica of St. Lawrence outside the walls, 3 at St. Paul outside the walls, and 1 in the Basilica of the 12 Holy Apostles. Among the popes not buried in Rome are Gregory XII, who abdicated before Benedict XVI and is buried in Recanati. Benedict XII and John XXII are in Avignon, France. Saint Celestine V is in L'Aquila, Italy. Blessed Gregory X in Arezzo. Saint Gregory VII in Salerno. And Saint Adeodatus I in Cinto Euganeo. Pope Francis had decided that he would be laid to rest in the Basilica of St. Mary Major, a choice that slightly altered the traditional funeral rites. At the conclusion of the funeral, his body was not taken to the Vatican Grottoes, as is customary. Instead, the procession moved towards St. Mary Major for his burial. What is, in the end, the meaning of the burial of a pope? Noi abbiamo I primi
secoli che vedono una lista. During the first centuries, many bishops of Rome are dubbed as saints. When we move into the second millennium, we lose the recognition of the sanctity of the popes. This recognition has been resumed in recent times. If we look at the 20th century popes, most of them were declared saints. The concept of the pope changes. When does the veneration of the popes return? In the 19th century, after the French Revolution, two popes, Pius VI and Pius VII, were arrested and deported into exile. Pius VII even dies as a prisoner in Valencia, France. Pius VII is a prisoner of Napoleon for 5 years, and at that moment, the images, the engravings of the imprisoned popes begin to circulate. This image also continues in the second half of the 19th century when Pius IX, with the arrival of the Italian government in Rome and the breach of Porta Pia that led to the seizure of Rome by the newborn Italian kingdom, considers himself a prisoner in the Vatican. At that point, what happens? Catholic pilgrims to Rome do not simply come to venerate the tomb of Peter or the tomb of the ancient Roman martyrs, but they come to meet the Pope. And so we come to our days when we also talk about the Papa Boys, the World Youth Days, in which devotion to the Pope, not only dead but living, has become a constitutive element of current Catholicism, a characterizing element.
In a spiritual testament, Pope Francis requested a simple burial in the earth at St. Mary Major. This beloved basilica will now stand as a place of pilgrimage in memory of a pope marked by humility and profound devotion to the Blessed Virgin.